Sound of Hockey episode 186. We're calling this one the Martin Erat episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, Martin Erat in the 2009-2010 season, while playing for the Nashville Predators, he had 168 shots on goal. How about that?
Excellent. Very nice. Yeah, good pick.
How many of those were goals? What was the shooting percentage?
Shooting percentage was 12.5%.
Not bad.
You had that lined up? You were ready for that?
The screen I have open has that all in there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's pretty impressive, though, that you had that answer at your fingertips there. I am impressed.
I know he played for other teams, but for some reason, I only picture him as a Predator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't think he played much beyond the Predators. And, I think I told you guys before, maybe not, is that I own a Martin Erat game-worn jersey when he was with the Predators.
You didn't tell us about... you told us about Marek Jedlicki, I think. Didn't you?
That's right. Because he was supposed to be the rookie of the year and he aged out. And then, anyway, yeah, you're right. So Erat, I have an Erat and a Jedlicki jersey. But one thing I love about Erat is he was traded to the Washington Capitals. And can you guys tell me who he was traded for?
Yes. Wasn't it Philippe Forsberg?
That's correct. Erat would do nothing with the Capitals.
Yeah.
And Forsberg's had a pretty good run.
He really has.
In Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, like, hell of a trade there by the Nashville Predators, really. I was going to say by the Capitals, but clearly it would have been false. So
Forsberg is pending UFA. FYI.
Okay.
If we're looking to sign any free agents.
And he's also a professional chimney sweep, correct?
Yes. He is the best sweep in the league. Yeah, for sure.
Well, don't you also have a yarn cruck jersey? Like, you're just all about the either the current or former.
I'm not a game worn jersey though. Yes, have a yarn cruck Kraken jersey. That's for sure.
Yes, but he's connected.
I like the Preds. I like the Preds. Obviously, I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah,
I was born in Nashville.
I did not know that, or maybe you told me and I forgot it.
I did not either, but I also wonder if you're just saying that because that sounded like one of those things that you might just say. Andy,
I have a birth certificate to prove it.
I was. You guys don't know where I was born, do you?
But is that actually your birth certificate, or is this like a Danny Almonte situation?
No, I was born there, and then we moved back to LA when I was about 2 months old, so I have no memories of Nashville, but that's where I was born.
Okay. Cool. All right. That sounds legit. John, for you, I'm going to go with, let's say Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe? No, that is incorrect. I was born in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Born and raised?
Not raised.
No.
Okay. 9 months. Similar to Andy's time in Nashville, I only spent 9 months in Philly and then moved away. So,
I was going to ask if on the playground is where you spent most of your days chilling out, Max, and relaxing. Hell of a start here. This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter. I am joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle. I am leaving on a jet plane tomorrow. Tonight is late Sunday night. And so we know that we just recorded a new episode and put it out a couple of days ago, but we figured that we should try to get another one out before the holidays and with holiday travel and stuff happening. We're just doing this thing. So it might be a little bit of a shorter episode, but we wanted to get it out to you before the holiday. And so that's that. Hey, also make sure to follow us on @sound_hockey. We do lots of live tweeting of the games. We do lots of witty banter with fans and listeners and readers and all that good stuff. So follow us there and follow us on Instagram. So, hey, let's talk about some Kraken news, which there's been a little bit, surprisingly, since we last recorded just a few days ago. There's only been one game, which was this 5-3 loss to the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. Kraken got pretty well dominated in the game. The weird thing about it, though, and I don't know if you guys felt this way, but first period, the Kraken got out to a 2-0 lead. Stuart Skinner, the goalie for the Oilers, looked really shaky in the beginning. Donato scored right away, right through the wickets. And it was funny because it reminded me a lot of the Yanni Gourde goal that he scored against Stuart Skinner like 2 weeks ago. And that was like how the Edmonton Oilers game started. And in that last game, too, Evan Bouchard had a goal and an assist. He's like just a run-of-the-mill defenseman. Well, I don't see him as like a big point producer defenseman. And last night, I think he had a goal and an assist as well. So I thought that was interesting that those two things happened that were like very similar to the last time that these two teams played each other. But what was interesting about the first period was it ended 2-2. And, you know, the Kraken, like I said, they got out to an early lead and then the Oilers pushed back, made it 2-2. And I looked up at the end of the period and it said that the shots were like 21-7. And I was like,
yep.
How the hell did that happen? Because it didn't feel like that to me. And that was like one of those eyeball test things where I was like, huh, what I just watched is not in line with like what the numbers say, because that is not that, like, I would not have expected it to be a 3-1 shot output, you know?
Yes. And after the game, Hacksaw said he thought the first period that they were pretty even in scoring chances. And I was like the same thing. I'm like, really? Because you were heavily outshot. But I looked it up and sure enough, scoring chances were 5-4 for Edmonton. So Seattle was right in there. Seattle actually had more high danger chances. So he was right. They were in there with the scoring chances. But Edmonton surely got more of the shot volume.
You know, I also think that's a thing that coaches do during the game. Like, I think that they tally up what they think are chances, right? And so that's their thing that they do, I think. I've noticed that and heard that from multiple coaches, and they'll always have like their own kind of personal count of how they think their team is doing based on the chances that they see in the game, which I think is interesting. So the other like kind of big pieces of news, there were two that came from that particular game. So first off, as we know, we talked about it a couple days ago, COVID is a big issue right now in the NHL. Not sure if you heard about this. So the game against the Maple Leafs had already been postponed. That was supposed to be on Sunday. The game against the Flames coming up on the 23rd had already been postponed. I was kind of thinking even in the afternoon Saturday that they probably weren't actually going to play against the Oilers. I was just really managing my own expectations on that. And that was because the Oilers had, I believe, what was it, 5 players in protocol. They had several guys on injured reserve. They weren't even actually able to dress a full team because they were out of cap space. And Andy, what happens during morning skate? Something funky happened there, right? Where they showed up.
Yeah, I went out after all the Seattle media stuff. I went out to the rink to watch the Oilers skate. And when I went out there, the ice had been cleared and all their water bottles were lined up on the bench, indicating to me that they were about to skate. But I could just, something felt off. Like, why aren't they already out here? Mm-hmm. So then I went to their room, outside their room where the media was, where they were holding the media conferences. And one of their assistant coaches who were taking over for Tippett, who's in COVID protocol himself, said, yeah, we're not having a skate this morning. We're waiting COVID tests. And then, just as he said that, the entire team walked out of the room together. And so I also had an uneasy feeling. I thought, well, this doesn't all sound good as far as a game happening tonight. But they did have one more guy go on. Pulgivari went on the list later that day on the COVID list. So they added one. They had called up a couple guys from Bakersfield just to be able to have a team on the ice. And so it was kind of crazy afternoon day.
Yeah. So, and clearly, like, I don't know if this has been officially proven, but if you kind of dot the lines from team to team, it does feel very much like the COVID is spreading from one team to the other when they play each other right now, right? So I'm like, with things going the way that they're going for Edmonton, where they're adding more and more guys, it just doesn't feel quite right. So then we get to game time, and I'm doing the little mental gymnastics up in the media area trying to figure out if anybody was missing, right? And Andy, I don't know if you do this during warmups, but I certainly do. Where I'm kind of looking for, you know, looking through the roster, trying to pick out guys that aren't out there and or if anything's changed from what I expected. And it really sticks out during line rushes, because then you can kind of see like, oh, this guy's partner isn't there, or, you know, this line isn't the same line that we had yesterday in practice or whatever. And so I'm going through the thing. I'm like, okay, Fleury, Giordano, that's an interesting pairing. And then I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Why would Fleury be with Giordano? And then I'm like, oh, Alexiak's not out there. So I tweeted out, you know, there's no Alexiak in warmups. And then seconds later, Kraken PR was like, he's in protocol. I'm like, oh, well, that's not a great thing. So all of a sudden, it just like the kind of there was this weird cloud, I thought, around this particular game, I think, because of that question of like, are we actually going to play this or not?
Well, and also in the morning, we were all watching on Twitter as games all across the league had been postponed, like left and right. And so I kind of thought, well, are we next here? Like, you know, the Toronto thing got canceled. There were games, I think, in Nashville that got canceled and elsewhere. And it was all kind of happening all at the same time in the morning. So it just kind of made you question. It was a weird feeling. It was a little bit of deja vu from 2020.
Totally. But yeah, so obviously Alexiak was in protocol then. Big loss for the Kraken to have him out. He's such an important player for them. And then during the game, Brandon Tanev got hurt. It looked bad. I mean, we don't have any update as of yet, because they ended up not practicing on Sunday. And on Saturday, it was you know, too soon for them to give any kind of information. So, but he got hit pretty hard by William Lagesson just behind the net towards the end of the third period. And it looked like a good clean hit. I was thinking he had just gotten like a Charlie horse or something, but then he got up and was putting almost no weight on his leg and he got kind of carried down the hallway. So I didn't think that looked too good. We'll see what happens there. That would be kind of a double whammy. And then on Sunday, the team announced, as they were not holding practice, they announced that Carson Soucy had also been sent to protocol. So now that's five players in protocol for the Kraken. However, I think Blackwell might be back or will be back very soon. And I believe Yanni Gord and Riley Shan are getting their 10 days also. So they may be coming out of protocol. But still, that's two new guys in 2 days into COVID protocol. And with the way that things have been going across the league, you're like, man, I really hope that this isn't the kind of like outbreak that has shut down teams lately, because it does not look good.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Soucy played the night before.
Scored a goal.
Played well. Yeah.
So, like, did he have it then? Like, it's just so weird, all the stuff.
Yeah, totally. The game itself, I think that there was kind of that winning formula there. We've talked about that before, which is, you know, the good goaltending, which I thought they got from Chris Drieger. He gave up four goals, but he also had a ton of shots. Maybe one of the goals he would have maybe wanted back, but it was through a screen. It tipped off his glove, went in, happens sometimes. I honestly thought he played very well. They got opportunistic scoring right early on. They had a 2-0 lead. And then I thought the structure was actually good. The problem was they didn't have the puck very much. Like, they almost never had the puck. So yep. I think Edmonton had 70% of the shot attempts is what it said on Natural Stat Trick, which that's, I mean, that indicates massive possession time for the Oilers. So that's not a great thing. You know, honestly, you can play a good structured game, but if you never have the puck, it's going to be awfully hard to win a game like that. And they still almost did win. I mean, they were right in it.
Yep.
All the way down to the end. And really, the game-winning goal came in the third period, and it was because Mark Giordano checked Warren Fogle into Chris Drieger with the puck. So,
yeah.
You know, I think they still could have won, and that's where I'm like, as long as they do those three things, they're always going to have a good chance to win. But they do have to have the puck a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's the thing. They were in it at the end, kind of hanging around. Like, all those possession numbers were kind of prevalent to me all game, and then just to have a chance in the third, knowing what, you know, and not to mention they're playing a pretty good team with some pretty good players without some of the Kraken's better players with Yanni Gord and Alexiak, pretty important guys are out. To have a chance, I mean, it's pretty respectable, although it was kind of still disappointing, you know, every time, you know, you're just rooting for a win, obviously. So anyway, go ahead, Andy.
Well, to Darren's point about Drieger, the fact that when you look at all the numbers and the fact that the scoring chances were 25-11 in Edmonton's favor, and Seattle was in the game, it was 3-3 until, you know, whatever, that midway through the third, whenever that goal was scored. That says a lot to me, like how, like, he was keeping him in that game, because you look at the numbers, they shouldn't have been in the game at all. You know, Edmonton really did own the puck and had more of the chances and shots and you name it. So good on Drieger. You know, you see four goals and say, oh, that you keep up four goals, that's awful. But we have to look at more of that. And he had, what, 30-some saves? And
36 or 35 saves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he kept them in the game, and good on him. I think he's been playing some pretty good hockey for them.
Yep, would agree. And we've talked about that before, too. And I think we just talked about a few days ago that him starting to really play well, that is a big step for the Kraken, right, in the right direction.
Yep.
And John, to your point about the Kraken having guys out, I do want to point out that the Oilers also were without Jesse Puljujärvi, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and also Zach Hyman. So that's three pretty important players
and
for
Duncan
them.
And Keith.
Yes, Keith as that's well. Right. So yep. That's four important players. So I don't know if you can really point to that as an excuse for not ever having the puck. But honestly, like I said, though, they like, I didn't hate the game that they played. Yes, the numbers looked bad, but I thought that they fought hard. I don't know. It was a weird game. It was just a weird game, a weird day. And I think if they bring that kind of game every night, but they can keep the puck on their stick a little bit more, I think they'll win, right? But they don't bring that kind of game every night, and it's hard to bring that kind of game, too, to have that much attention to detail and all that. So
yeah.
One thing I do want to note that's kind of a positive thing is Ryan Donato now has goals in three straight games, which is kind of cool. I think he's one of those guys that, you know, we've talked about it a few times, that we don't know what happens where he kind of just quickly gets pushed down the roster, pushed into healthy scratch mode or whatever. And he's already experienced that a couple of times, but Hackslaw moved him from a fourth line role to a third line role along with Morgan Geeky and Jonas Donskoy. And he contributed again. So scores, you know, a goal early in the game, and things are just starting to go in for him. So I think he's one of those guys that, like, kind of has to be scoring to be seen by his coaches as having a positive impact. And so he's doing that now, which is good. And that's just my opinion. I don't know if that's actually the case or not, but
I mean, the value he has, right, to iterate on what you're saying is that he can score goals, right? Yeah. He knows how to score goals, and scoring goals is relatively rare in the league in general, like to be a pure goal scorer, but you know, he kind of is. There's obviously something as a defensive liability, right, that makes him fall out of favor with coaches. But even in that Edmonton game, I love that he didn't score a goal, but you know, he fought a checker off down low and then drove to the net and almost kind of chipped it in up close. It was just a really, you know, that's his nose for the net, right? He's like, he's going hard to the net every time. And I think there's something to be said about that. Yeah, three goals is great, but he's still only playing like, you know, 11 or 12 minutes a game, which isn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, at least two of the goals, I'm trying to remember the one in Anaheim, but at least two of them have been right in front of the net too. So to what John's point, he's not afraid to go with the quote unquote dirty areas right in front of the net. And he's been able to get the stick on pucks and get them in.
Yep. He also lost a game of paper, rock, scissors to a young child in warmups who was holding a sign that said, oh, don't even give me any kind of conspiracy theory that he intentionally lost.
Andy. I was going to give you that conspiracy theory. If you watch it very carefully, he delays his choice till after the kid has shown his
No, choice. I'm not accepting that. I absolutely will not accept that. That is, I mean, I just think that he needs to work on that. You know, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why he ends up on the fourth line or in the healthy scratch mode, because he's not very good at paper, rock, scissors.
And how did he deliver that puck to that player? Or to that, sorry.
Through the camera hole.
Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Which we talked about last week.
We did.
About the layout.
So that little kid was holding a sign that was like clearly handwritten in his own childish handwriting.
I have childish handwriting.
It said like Donato, rock, paper, scissors for a puck, which I would like to know what was really in it for Donato there.
Yeah, what were the stakes on the other side?
No tic tacs.
No tic tacs.
This is why I'm saying it was a conspiracy.
Okay.
Was he going to like beat the kid and then just get away like, sorry, kid?
You're going like, yeah, no chance.
You lose.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. And then the last thing that we want to talk about before we move on to some NHL talk is that there is a large tentacle in the rafters now. I think it's safe for us to say that because it was up there and it definitely was noticed and we saw people talking about it on Reddit. We didn't want to like spill that news and have it not be out there yet, but clearly there were thousands of people in the building the other night and it's just kind of up there. So I can't help wondering what that is going to be. It looks like something that's going to come down to the ice, and then there's a bunch of like blue ice shards around it that are kind of floating around too. So I'm very curious to see what they do with that as part of the game operation stuff. So that'll be cool whenever that happens.
On top of that, to add some more mystery to that, I was over at spent the day at KXP's gathering space between the morning skate and the afternoon. And I was sitting looking out the window. And I noticed at one point they closed the curtain on the window into the arena. And I wonder if there was a rehearsal going on.
Very interesting.
I can't prove it. I wasn't in the building. I don't know what was happening, but usually I have been in the building when they rehearse things, and usually that window stays open.
Yeah. Well, they are going to do some NFT releases this week.
Yeah,
isn't
that's true.
One of those.
I thought we weren't supposed to talk about anymore.
Well,
that was Darren's own rule.
I know.
Yeah. But isn't it supposed to be a mascot thing initially? Like they're going to
do part
of the mascot. Yeah. It's an NFTzer is what it is.
Oh
man.
That's terrible, but also kind of good.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah.
So the NHL news that we have, none of it is particularly good news, I would say. In fact, a lot of it is bad news. But basically what's happening is the NHL and NHLPA have said that they want to continue on with the regular seasons. So they're not going to like fully pause the league or anything like that. But they have postponed any game between U.S. and Canadian teams right now. And then everything is going to be on kind of a case-by-case basis for shutting down individual teams temporarily. They also said that in the coming days, quote-unquote, there's going to be a final decision on the Olympics, which if there needs to be a final decision made, that tells me that they're probably not going. But maybe we'll circle back to that in a moment. The thing about the U.S. and Canadian teams, it does kind of make sense because there were teams getting, you know, like players rather getting stuck in the other country and then having to quarantine there for 10 plus days and like not being able to get back home or whatever. So not great. I know there was something with the Carolina Hurricanes where they had to like medevac them or something. Do you know that story, John?
Yeah, supposedly they had to take a medical or an ambulance or some kind of medical auto down to the States. They were stuck at the border for a while, but they eventually took from Vancouver into Seattle, and then they could fly from Seattle to North Carolina.
Great.
Back home.
So they brought COVID into Seattle.
I'm sure they were sealed up in a van.
Let's not go there. But yeah. Because Edmonton and PRV was here on Saturday, he's theoretically stuck in Seattle for 10 days.
I saw that he got back.
Maybe he's listening.
He got back. I saw somebody say that he got back and he was sleeping in his own bed or something. So I don't know how he did that, if he had to take I don't know. I honestly have no idea how he would have got back.
Maybe he took a private Oilers, too much, but yeah. private Oilers plane or something.
Well, there is such a thing as like a medical ambulance plane too that they can take, but I'm sure it's very, very expensive. I also wonder if they wouldn't have let him drive across the border, right? If he's got COVID.
No, you can't. Yeah, you have to have a clean test.
Unless you're in probably
NHL team.
Hospital an ambulance. Maybe.
I think Darren's onto it.
Anyway, so nothing good really happening in the NHL. That's pretty much it. And then that Olympics thing that I alluded to, I have to think that means they're not gonna go. And maybe you'll even know the final answer here before the podcast comes out, but it just feels to me like if they have to have that conversation, why would they why would they have to be having that conversation unless they weren't going to say league-wide, we're not going to go? We were talking before we started recording, and our thought has always been like, well, it should be up to the players, right? That if they are willing to take the risk and go, potentially get stuck there for longer because they have COVID and obviously the health concern. But really, I think it is starting to become a schedule thing now because so many games have been postponed. And so I think that they're going to use that card and say we just have too many games that have been postponed and we need that time back in February. That's what I think. But I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts.
The league and the Players Association put out a statement today saying kind of both of those things, that because of there's like 30 some games that are going to be postponed, that they're looking at how to make that up. And February obviously would be a great time to do that. But then they also said, and also of health concerns. So it's a little bit of both, but I think it's probably more on the schedule than anything else. How they're going to fit these games in, and they'd already cleared out a whole month. So it would make sense that you could do that.
It's going to be weird though, because they need to kind of figure out which teams have open nights or what facilities have open nights. And they're obviously not going to be like scatter it throughout, the 4-week break or whatever.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like you play one game. Because the reality is there's some teams that probably missed a game or two, like Seattle right now.
That's true.
They're two on the table right now. So they're not going to like scatter those over four weeks. So, man, that scheduler guy, he's got a name because I've heard his name mentioned a lot.
Jonathan
lately.
Scheduler.
Yeah.
Johnny
Schedule. I can't imagine having that job. Uh-oh. That's crazy, particularly now. So
I wonder, it's going to be interesting because I wonder if somebody will lose a home game out of this somehow just because of the only time they can play a game is to play it in the other team's arena.
Well, and I was thinking about Toronto because that's one of the more complicated ones, at least to come back to here, Seattle.
Yeah.
So how is that going to work?
Because they probably don't have a West Coast trip again, although they have to make up a Vancouver game now.
And San Jose. So
that's
so
right. Yeah.
They do have three games to make up. So I think they'll figure that out. I haven't really started to game plan it really, because what's the point, right? It's all going to change anyway. Yeah. So, but it is interesting. So.
And I do know too that like with all these arenas expecting to be empty during almost the entire month of February, they all had a bunch of like extra concerts and events and stuff that they put on. So it's a lot to work around. So
although Climate Pledge is a pretty clean schedule.
Interesting.
Maybe Seattle should just host all these games.
Yeah. Like a bubble, except let us in to watch all of it. Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a tough time for Jonathan Scheduler. He's going to have a tough go here.
Johnny Calendar is going to have a busy week.
Calendar.
The other piece of NHL news from around the league this week, Paul Maurice resigned from his post at the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. That was interesting. He goes out on his own terms, quote unquote, although I have a conspiracy theory about this.
Oh, go on.
We'll circle back to it. I want to hear what you guys thought about him resigning.
I was surprised. I've always liked him as a coach. There was a time where he was a free agent coach to be, and I was hoping that he wouldn't resign there so we could go after him here in Seattle. But yeah, it's weird. He kind of said some weird things about how he didn't feel that the team, or that he felt that the team needed a new voice, and that he wasn't able to push all the right buttons. they weren't terrible. They were, I mean, they weren't great. They weren't lighting the world on fire, but they also weren't, you know, at the bottom of the league. So interesting thing that he would just resign like out of nowhere like that.
Yeah, it is interesting. He had an interesting quote there that I'm probably going to butcher the quote here, but he said something to the fact that he's a good coach. This is a good team. But there just comes a time where they need a new voice, and I could see that. I could recognize that. Do you know Paul Maurice is the sixth winningest coach in NHL history?
He's been around for, a long time. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, he started really young, too. Mm-hmm. He started very young. He started in the league when he was 29 years old.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, I think it is fascinating that he would leave like that on his own terms. It is so rare for a coach to say that I'm hanging it up as opposed to being asked to leave. And that's kind of where my conspiracy theory comes in, is I just wonder if, because he's been around for so long, he's so tenured, he's so well, like, universally respected, right? And, you know, there's the thing with, like, the players, right? Because I've heard this brought up a few times, maybe about Marc-Andre Fleury recently, where, do you really want to finish out this season with the Blackhawks if they're going to be out of it? Or do you want to be traded somewhere, you know? And I heard somebody saying the other day, like, he's earned that opportunity to say, oh, I'd rather be traded somewhere than continue to play and lose and all this, right? So I just wonder if there's that kind of respect given to a guy like Paul Maurice, who's been around for so long, and maybe they were like, hey, this is it. Like, it's not happening this year, and this was the last year that we were going to give you anyway, so we're going to make a change unless you want to resign so that you can go out on your own terms and kind of just save face. That's kind of my conspiracy theory. I have no reason to believe that, like, you know, I don't have any hot insider info or anything like that. That's just my conspiracy theory.
I don't think that's the first time I've heard that about him, too. Mm, so okay. Just so you know, you're not alone in this.
Well, I might have just told you that twice.
No, okay. You didn't.
I will admit to not following the Jets close enough this season to know the answer, but had there been rumors or speculation that he was on the hot seat?
No, and the Jets are an extremely, like, loyal organization. And so, to your point, Darren, I think maybe there's somewhere in between where he was starting to have dialogues and saying, like, hey, I don't know if they're on the right person for this anymore. You probably need to consider it. So it was more, I think it was a little more mutual and probably known than he just one day woke up and said, I don't want to be the coach anymore.
Yeah,
I think,
sure. You
know, Cheval Dayoff probably saw it coming, based on dialogue that they've been having. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle of he made his own decision and the team made kind of forced him to do it. So I think there's probably some gray area that they had because they have a great relationship, or at least that's the perception that I've always thought of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And a former WHL coach, Dave Lowry, who coached the Victoria Royals for a long time, and I believe got a gig with Team Canada once in the World Juniors. He now takes over as the interim.
And he's the father of who?
T. Jaginla.
Adam Lowry.
I did not know that.
And who does Adam Lowry play for?
The Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah,
that's right.
Fascinating.
So, father-son combo in Winnipeg.
Wow, I did not know that. Yep. I actually didn't, because he was in the organization already, right?
Yeah.
Lowry, he was an assistant. Yeah, he was on the bench. Yeah.
So yeah, I just didn't know that there was that connection there previously. So it's not T. Jaginla. One thing about Lowry. What's the older Lowry's name?
Dave.
Dave.
One thing about Dave Lowry, I saw a clip of him the other day when he got named as the interim, where back when he was playing, and there was some sort of big brouhaha had happened, and Craig Berube had been in the penalty box for a long time, is serving, I don't know if he's serving like a fighting major or something, and I know what it was, a Ducks player had run their goalie, like he sprinted in from the blue line and like ran over the goalie. So then Craig Berube needed to get out of the penalty box to fight somebody, but the clock was running down, right? So like his penalty was over, but he was still in there because it was a coincidental, so he had to wait for a whistle. Mm-hmm. And so Lowry got the puck, and with the clock winding down, he just flipped it over the glass and like took a penalty, a delay, delay of game penalty.
Just so the guy could come out.
Yeah, just so Berube could get out. And then I think he jumped like freezing or something, like some non-fighter, right? Like it was a hilarious video that was the part that Lowry played.
I saw that too. That's pretty
that
good.
Was floating around.
The good old days to some people.
Yeah. So speaking of WHL. People and T. Jaginla, we have a WHL update from our WHL correspondent, Andy Ide. Andy?
The two Puget Sound teams, Seattle and Everett are off to good seasons, and they're separated by 4 points in the standings. Everett's up on Seattle by 4. They had a home-and-home this weekend on Friday and Saturday. Friday, Seattle won pretty handily. Now, Everett is playing with a bunch of players out. They have some injuries, and they have 3 guys off at the World Junior, different World Junior camps. So Seattle took care of them Friday, but then up in Everett on Saturday, Everett, who only had 14 skaters, managed to beat Seattle and get some little bit of revenge. So the spread remains 4 points in the standings. I think Seattle may have a game in hand, if I remember correctly. So that's going to be an interesting race down the stretch here, those two teams who don't like each other historically and both have good squads this year. So, you know, get out there and go to a game if you can get to one of those, because they're going to be fun.
Good stuff.
And then Tiege Aginla, we've determined or decided that it's Tiege.
In our defense, we actually took a good 10 minutes to try to figure out the correct pronunciation before recording tonight. And the problem is there's all these highlights of him, like, oh, watch him do this thing. But there's never an announcer that explains how to say it, right? So, and even like I saw an interview with him, and for whatever reason, the guy didn't call him by his first name in the interview. Yeah. So we don't know. We're going to go with Tiege. If we're wrong on this and you know it, feel free to let us know. Yeah. And just know that we did our due diligence, but we failed in finding out the answer.
If we're wrong, I'm sure we'll hear from Jerome again.
Certainly.
He's a listener of the show.
Oh, we know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tiege Aginla has officially signed with the Seattle Thunderbirds. So we will be seeing him in Seattle. He could play 5 games this year at any time. I don't know if that's happening because the T-Birds are done for until the holiday, after the holidays, because the league, the WHL shuts down for about 9-10 days around the holidays. So stay tuned to that. But last episode, we talked about him being drafted, and we speculated whether or not he would sign, and the Thunderbirds were able to get him to put pen to paper. So he's officially going to be a Thunderbird.
Cool.
So that's exciting.
Yes.
And then further ruining hockey, as John Tortorella says, the Portland Winterhawks on Saturday night pulled off the Zegras goal. It was Cross Hannes, who was a Detroit Red Wing prospect, behind the net. They were playing in Spokane, and he flipped it. There were like three, different than the Zegras goal, he flipped it past 3 Spokane defenders to James Stefan, who was there, who batted it in. I should say, though, Stefan did cross-check a guy out of the way before he got the puck, so I don't know if that was a penalty miss or not, but pretty impressive, and it's amazing how quickly another team was able to pull that off after Zegras did it about like a week ago.
Yeah, it's almost like a push-off on like offensive pass interference in football, right, when you cross-check a guy out of the way so that you can complete the Zegras goal. But I got to say, he really did bat it in with a lot of gusto, and it almost looked a little cooler, I thought, than the Zegras one.
He was further away, too, because Sonny Milano... he was right in front of the net, like in the crease, and Stefan was further back.
Yeah.
Do you guys know who Stefan's father is?
Stefan Matteau.
No, same last name.
Oh.
No guesses.
No.
Patrick Stefan.
Yes.
Is that I knew there was a that's probably sounded dumb, but I couldn't remember what the first name of that player was.
Yeah. That's James Stefan's father.
Do you like how I assumed that somebody with the last name Stefan, his father would actually be somebody with the first name of Stefan and not last name?
Yeah, Stefan Matteau. Yeah, I like that.
So that's our WHL update. thank you to our WHL correspondent, Andy Ide. We now move on to, we want to do a quick World Junior primer. John, I think you were going to carry the mail on this one. I think we're going to...
I was hoping Andy would carry the mail.
Oh, okay.
The U.S. will repeat as a gold medalist led by Matty Beniers.
Mm-hmm. All right, and that's our primer. World Junior primer.
No, World Juniors are coming up. They start right around either on Christmas Day or the day after. I have to look at the schedule, I'll be honest.
But 26th.
Boxing Day, yeah. I love this tournament. We've talked about it before on here. It's like most of the players, like especially with the big countries like U.S. and Canada and Sweden, Russia, most of them have been drafted already. There are some notable exceptions. You know, guys who are going to be drafted in the next year or two. But it's just, so it's high-level hockey. These are high-end prospects. It's fun hockey. They're playing for their countries. The games are usually pretty, well, the games amongst the medal contenders are usually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, there's usually some real stinkers.
Yeah,
like if you see Austria on the schedule, you probably don't need to tune into that. Although, I don't know, is Austria even in the tournament this year? I know they do, like, relegation and stuff.
Yeah,
but anyway. There's
Latvia is another one that struggles sometimes.
Yeah, there's going to be some stinkers, no question.
Yeah. But when you get into the medal rounds or it's the contending teams playing each other, that's some really good hockey to watch. It's fun. There's a lot of great players. And then you'll sound smart at the you know, as those guys show up in the NHL, you'll be like, oh yeah, I saw that guy play in the World Juniors.
That's right. So yeah, so tune into that if you can. It's, man, it's fantastic. And usually I feel like, you know, you have some time off of, hopefully you have some time off of work around then. And
yeah,
just, you know, it's good to just
it's
sit
all
around
day junior hockey.
It's great. Sweet. It's really fun. It's really fun to watch.
Last year, we talked about this a little bit last week, but last year it was great because we hadn't had hockey in so long. And
yeah,
it was before the NHL returned. So it was kind of a nice little setup for the NHL's return to play.
You know, I will ask you guys this. Do you, and it's funny because I had the same exact thought last year. I looked at the rosters and I saw Canada's roster and I'm like, holy crap, these guys are so good based on, you know, where all the players were drafted and stuff. Do you think that the U.S. has a chance of doing what they did again last year?
Well, I didn't think they had a chance last year.
Right. And that's the thing is I'm like, I truly did not think they had any chance in the world of winning the gold medal last year. Maybe not any chance in the world, but it seemed very slim that they were going to beat Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they did. Now, it happened on a night where they kind of caught lightning in a bottle and Spencer Knight played out of his mind. And there's a reason that Spencer Knight is now in the NHL 1 year later. Right. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Last year they had Canada had 9, 10, 11 first round picks on their roster, NHL first round picks, some absurd number like that.
Okay.
I will say this though, it's junior hockey. And so you see weird upsets in junior hockey. So I think a team that is will be talented as the U.S. will always has a chance. I mean, I think they always could, like you said, they catch them on the right night. You just see that in junior hockey all the time. So yeah, I think they have a shot. I think they're probably gunning for at least a medal. But that's what makes it kind of fun, is it's a little bit unpredictable at times.
Yeah.
Well, so last year, though, let's back up. Last year was a really, really good U.S. team. That was the 2019 draft class that had Cole Caulfield, Matthew Boldy, Brock Faber, Trevor Zegras, Cam York, Alex Turcotte. It had tons and tons of talent, but they were kind of weaker in comparison to Canada's team, who, like you said, Darren, was completely stacked. But U.S. team was pretty stacked last year. Mm-hmm. And I think both teams aren't as good as they were last year, right? From if you just look at kind of the draft class type potential. So I think Canada's kind of got an advantage again this year. U.S. definitely doesn't have the experience that they had last year. So I always think, like Andy said, there's always a chance. I think they U.S. always had a chance last year because I heard it from my Canadian friends all leading up to the tournament.
Interesting.
They were texting me and I'm like, you guys, like, yeah, you're stacked, but this is our year too. Like, this is our best year. So anyway, I do think, I mean, that's why you watch it, right?
That's why you play the games.
Canada's always favored. You know, don't sleep on Finland. Don't sleep on Switzerland. And then Russia is always good too. Yeah. Russia flies under the radar because they don't have a lot of North American skaters, or they have zero North American skaters that are playing in juniors here. So the names aren't as familiar as some of the names here. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. Can't wait.
There's a couple of fun little things to watch for. Like this year you'll have Beniers playing against two of his Michigan teammates, because last year Kent Johnson and Owen Power didn't go play for Canada, but they are on the team this year. So that'll be a fun little thing to watch those guys who are really good friends face off against each other. And you mentioned Russia, and I said about how they're mostly already drafted, but there are, I mean, we talked about Connor Bedard making it at 16. Shane Wright at 17 is on Team Canada. Michikov is another prospect who I think is 2023 as well. I think he's the same age as Bedard for Russia, who's an unbelievable prospect. So I think, you know, in 2 years it'll be Bedard or Michikov, whichever you like better. To be the number one pick. So there's some guys though to watch. There's that Brad Laber kid from Finland. Wait, is he Finland or Sweden? Finland, right? Yeah.
Finland.
Yeah. His name is Brad Lambert, so you wouldn't think he's from Finland. But
you think he's from Ohio. Yeah.
he's another really top prospect who's still a year away from being drafted. So there are some future prospects to watch in this, as long as, you know, future NHLers. And if you go through like all the stars in the NHL, almost every one of them played in the World Juniors. I mean, it's rare that you find like a star in the NHL who didn't play at some point in the World Juniors.
Yep, I'm very excited about it, and I hope that folks will tune in and watch, because it is
good hockey.
Great time. We now move on to our segments, and our first segment is everyone's favorite segment, which is Goalie Gear Corner!
Oh, I thought it was Bad Boys.
No, that's coming in a bit. You can clearly see on the show notes here, we are on to Goalie Gear Corner here, gentlemen.
Oh. Well, sometimes we skip sections. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
You know why I did that? Because last week it didn't make sense the way that we had it arranged. We had, I think we had weekly one-timers before Goalie Gear Corner, and it just didn't flow with like how we normally do the show. And so I made a last-minute audible to switch how we are going to do it, but I forgot to go back. That's what happened.
The old switcheroo.
It was the old switcheroo, and I did it to myself. I did the switcheroo to myself, and it caused some failure, but I'm glad that Andy caught my mistake and fixed it. And I'm just noticing now that as of this moment, we actually have zero weekly one-timers on our list at all for this week. So,
just imagine some of the things we've already talked about were weekly one-timers.
Yeah. Our goalie gear... How did we do that 2 weeks in a row, you guys?
Finely tuned professionals.
Yeah,
we are
technically
here.
A different screw up this week. So
yes, yeah, it's different.
We've got a lot of good content, though. It's all good content.
Yeah, like the Seattle Kraken, we're finding new ways to lose. Just kidding.
Ouch.
Everyone, kidding. Harsh. I'm kidding. I said I was kidding. Our goalie gear corner this week comes from Team USA goalie Nicole Hensley. It is sort of a Brian's setup, but there's a wrinkle on this one because Brian's does not have licensing for IIHF play. So they can't put any logos on their pads, which is interesting. So she's got a Brian's setup, and it's really cool. It's very clean. It's got a little USA crest in the upper corner of each pad. And then there's a diagonal line. So they're blue from like the knee up, but then there's also just solid blue. There's like a diagonal line going in like a V shape down halfway through the pad. And then there's red, white, and blue vertical stripes below that diagonal line. It looks really cool. It's a clean, clean, crisp look. It's not like over the top. I've seen some Team USA setups over the years where you're like, that's too much. And I don't think that that's the case here. I like that it's like a mix of busy and just solid color. I think it looks great. I think it's really funny though that they're like under the radar Brian's, right? She can't say that they're Brian's and she can't put any logos on there. They're just going to
be
blank. We know.
They know that we know it's Brian's.
Well, they don't know that we know that they know. So
did we do this last week?
Yes, I think we did. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, cool stuff there from Nicole Hensley and from, it's from Brian's, but we won't tell anybody.
No, we don't want to violate IIHF rules.
Who also listens in on this podcast all the time?
And that wraps up our Goalie Gear Corner. We now move on to You Don't See That Every Day. We have two of those You Don't See That's Every Day. The first one comes from the WHL, and it was the Lethbridge Hurricanes against the Medicine Hat Tigers. And a shot comes in, hits the crossbar, and the puck breaks in half. And so part of the puck goes in the net, and the guy who shot the puck skates over, and he's like, look, here's part of the puck in the net. And then I think it's the Medicine Hat player is in the corner with the other half of the puck, and he's like, well, nope, here's the other half of the puck. And then I saw some of your reply to it just says, no goal, entire puck has to cross the
That's
line.
That's right. That's right.
That's good.
You know what this reminds me of, and we might hear the music for what this reminds me of later in the show, but it reminds me of The Natural when he hit the cover off the ball.
Oh, yeah. Now, but that counted as a home run, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he ran around the bases, yeah.
Wait, he did...
Oh,
did
no, he ended up on third. I think he ended up on third.
Did he hit the cover off the ball? I thought his thing was that he hit it into the lights and made the lights explode.
That happened later, but his first game,
uh-huh.
He hit the cover off the ball and no one knew what to do, and I think he ran all the way to third and then stopped and they called time or something, but he knocked in the winning run.
Okay. I think that also happened in the Sandlot, didn't it? That he knocks the cover off the ball?
Maybe.
I don't know. We might have to check this one. There might have to be some fact checking. So that's our first You Don't See That Every Day. Our second one comes from Rockford Ice Hogs of the AHL. So Colin Delia, remember him? Colin Delia, who was a Blackhawks goalie for a while. Obviously, he's been sent down now that Marc-Andre Fleury is on the team. He scored a goal. But the way that it happened is the Texas Stars took a shot, it hit him, and then they tried to make a pass or something, it didn't connect, and they cleared it all the way back down into their own goal from like 200 feet away. So, but he was the last Rockford player to touch it, so he got credit for the goal, which is pretty funny. You don't see that every day.
No, you don't.
All right, that wraps up that piece of our show. We now move on to Bad Boys, which John and Andy claim is people's favorite segment, but I don't think I buy that for a second.
People like to hear about suspensions.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Brett Connolly was suspended for 4 games for his really bad hit on Tanner Caro of the Dallas Stars. And what happened was the puck was kind of going up the dasher board and Tanner Kara was looking back for it. He turns around. If you just didn't hear me very well on the microphone, that's because I was demonstrating. Yeah, I turned away from the microphone. So the puck comes past him. This is not a good thing to be laughing about. The puck comes past him. He turns around and there's Connolly and he just absolutely crushes him. And it's such a bad hit. It knocks him out completely. Like Kara was clearly out. They stretchered him off the ice. It was a bad, scary situation. And then after the game, they asked Joe Pavelski about it. And he was like very emotional, very much in tears and like having a hard time catching his breath because he was so upset. And I think one of the things was he was kind of having like flashbacks to his own injuries that he's had over the years. And he's like, you know, I've been there. So it's it was a scary, scary hit. And you never want to see that. Definitely a deserved suspension for Brett Connolly. Our next bad boy is Jason. This one's kind of comical.
It's like a bad boys update.
Yeah. Jason Spezza. Yes. Yeah. We talked about this one, right? The Jason Spezza, Neil Pionk one. So Spezza was appealing the decision to suspend him. Let's see, it was 6 games originally. So they decided to reduce it to 4 games, but he had already served 4 games. So they basically just gave him like time served and he was able to get out of jail at that point. But what happened, John?
Yeah, he went from being essentially unsuspended to COVID protocol immediately within 24 hours of getting cleared. So, yeah. So now those games got canceled.
He's gonna miss more than 6 games, right?
Well, the games got canceled, so he technically didn't miss any. But yeah, so it was quite the 24-hour period for him.
Hmm. Did they give a reason why they reduced the suspension just because of this appeal?
They cited kind of his impeccable history. Like he's never had an issue. Never, you know, it's very. You know, a well-behaved young man, if you ask me.
That was a knee to the head, right? And it was like he kneed a guy in the head.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
That pretty bad.
It wasn't great, yeah. Anyway, that's our bad boys. Ooh, one last thing. What did you guys think about the Jeremy Lauzon hit? Because I saw some people tweeting today that he should be suspended for it, but I haven't heard any kind of rumblings that there's any discipline coming for him. But the one that led to the fight with, well, the quote-unquote fight with Colton Sevier.
I was at the time, I thought it was, I thought there was going to be a penalty. I was looking at the refs right away. And then there was no arm went up. I don't know. I thought it clearly looked like a check from behind or boarding, whatever you want to call there. But Sevier asked for the fight, and I don't think he wants to ask for that fight again.
So I actually don't know that he asked him for a fight. I think he, because the way that it played out, and this was kind of bonkers too. So I would agree with you, Andy. As soon as the hit happened, because it was like full on numbers were facing Lauzon. He hit him in the numbers, threw him basically face first into the dasher board. Like it was a really dangerous hit. And I immediately looked at the referees, right? I'm like, oh, they got to be putting their arms up. They did not. Sevier then gets on top, starts cross-checking Lauzon. And then Lauzon,
which is a penalty in itself.
Right.
Yes.
Lauzon gets up and he gets his gloves off and starts throwing punches. And Sevier I don't even think he even dropped his gloves. He just kind of like turtled. So I don't think he actually wanted the fight. And I don't think he's much of a fighter at all. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, I'm messing with a guy who knows how to handle himself in Jeremy Lauzon. And we have seen over this season that Jeremy Lauzon does, in fact, know how to handle himself in those situations. So,
in my mind, all the cross checks was asking for the fight.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if we don't know what was said.
But let's fight. But if you cross check a guy like that, who was a guy like Lauzon in the back a bunch of times,
you're saying
he's
going to
get up mad. He's probably going to get mad. Yeah, you're probably going to have a reaction from a guy like Lauzon.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it from a perspective of, oh my God, he got thrown face first into the dasher board. Then also got his ass kicked because he, you know, tried to push back a little bit. And Lauzon was like, well, you can't do that to me. I'm just going to kick the crap out of you, which he did.
It was understandable why he was mad, but he did. I believe he did score a goal later in the game. So
Then I think he looked right at Lauzon.
And to be clear, like, there's no suspension if that's how it played out, right? Like it could be a penalty, that's fine, but it's not a suspension. If I know it sounds crappy, but if the guy's not hurt, particularly if he goes in and cross-checks the guy a bunch of times, it's not like they're going to suspend Lauzon for that.
I also looked at the rest when all the cross-checks were happening. I'm like, first I looked because of the hit, and then when the cross-check, I'm like looking again like, are they going to get that?
I don't know though, John. I think they've certainly suspended guys for hits when I'm obviously not hoping that they suspend him, but when
there weren't penalties.
When there aren't penalties on the play or guys don't get hurt
agree. Well, it's usually an injury, like, people get hit from behind all the time and there's penalties all the time.
That's a good point. I think if he had gotten hurt, it certainly would have been a different story. Nonetheless, It certainly should have been a penalty if we're being totally honest here.
I didn't see a replay, so I'm having a hard time validating that, but that sounds right.
Yeah, it's pretty dangerous.
You guys both seem to have that same opinion.
Yeah. But... Well, that was my initial thought was, oh, that's a penalty. And it was really early in the game, too, like the first 5 minutes of the game.
I mean, but there was a play later in the game where, like, Larson got hit in the back, too. And,
yeah, there was.
And I didn't think – I mean, I'm like, yeah, they let that stuff go all the time. So.
Good save there. That was close.
That stuff.
All right, so we don't have any weekly one-timers, but we do have Sound of Hockey's 3 stars. Andy, your star of the week.
So I'm going to go away from the NHL, which I'm sure you two are giving me grief for, but I am going down to the American Hockey League for a player.
Okay.
And again, it's a goalie, which I think is my third straight goalie. So I got to get my head checked for that.
Get your priorities straight.
I'm going with friend of the pod, Dustin Wolf, formerly of the Edmonton Silver Tips, now playing for the Stockton Heat, which is the Calgary Flames affiliate, obviously, because that's who drafted him.
I was applauding because I approve of this now. Initially, I was upset that you're going away from the NHL.
I would only do it for a local player that has some ties. Okay. But he has played 16 games in the NHL so far. His record is 14-0-2, so he's not lost in regulation yet. His goals against average is 1.84, and his save percentage is 940.
Wow.
It's just unbelievably good start. And obviously, you know, all the worries about his height don't seem to be coming true, at least in this at this level of professional hockey. So.
No, and that's the thing is, like, I remember hearing people say, like, oh, well, he's a really good goalie. But, like, once he gets to pro hockey, they're going to know how to pick those corners in his, you know, up over his ears and whatever. And that hasn't happened yet. He's showing that he knows how to play at the pro level, too.
Yeah, so 16 games is a pretty good sample size, too. It's not like he's played 4 games and, you know, putting up good numbers. 16. Yeah.
And we were... I mean, going back to the 2019 draft in Vancouver that we were all at, you know,
he was like 7 spots from the last guy.
Yeah, something the last 10 picked. And, you know, he was at the draft. And I just remember seeing him in that podium and the emotions were there because, he was probably, you know, talking to himself that he's not going to get drafted. And then he gets drafted. Yes, he's excited, but he's also like, overcome with emotions. Yeah. But one thing, and Andy, you can probably attest to this, but it just seems like that kid works so hard and he's so focused on being a great goalie because he has like exceeded expectations probably every step of the way, probably because of the height. There's always a bias toward that. Mm-hmm. But it's so cool to see him successful like at this next level, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, this isn't the end goal, obviously, and this is his first year, so but really cool to see, you know, his success and bringing it back. He played in World Juniors just last year as the backup goalie to Spencer Knight, so those are the kind of players you see there. So
well what a great draft pick by Calgary, though. 7th rounder.
Yeah.
You know, that you pick 7th rounders just like, well, maybe we'll catch lightning in a bottle
here. If half of them make the NHL, you're excited. Yeah.
And so, I mean, what a great value pick that is. That, you know, guy, that people are just grasping for straws. The 7th rounder, they're drafting their buddy's kid for kicks. You know, things like that happen in the 7th round. I remember Martin Brodeur picking his son one year with like the last pick of the draft. I don't think his kid ever made it anywhere near NHL. But for Wolf he was such a great goalie in junior, and you never wonder how – you always wonder how that's going to translate. There have been a lot of great junior goalies who you never hear from again.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's picking up right where he left off. These numbers are right up there with what he did in Everett.
All right. Are you done with your star of the week now?
Yeah.
That was a long star of the week. Yeah.
My star of the week.
We don't often have a friend of the pod.
That's fair.
That's fair. My star of the week is also a goalie. It is Robin Lehner. And not really for any particular stats or anything, although I think he had a pretty good week. But he took his helmet off and tried to fight a guy in New Jersey, which I thought was pretty cool. And then he also, they did a big tribute for him in Long Island when they played the Islanders, because obviously he used to be there. And he credits the area of Long Island for like getting his life back together because he had a lot of problems back in the day. And he pointed at his neck tattoo, which is a tattoo of Long Island, and that really got the crowd going. He just did a little point at the neck tat. Just, here's my neck tat. And people are like, yeah, that's awesome. Awesome neck tat.
Man, I love Robin Lehner. I got to say, awesome. Every time I hear him speak, like, he just seems like such a great human. I love that he shares his mind, like, is vulnerable at times. I honestly wish we had more of that in this league, because it's more than just getting pucks deep, getting more shots to the net, getting traffic, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's also, look at my neck tat, and...
yeah, and let me get a Long Island tattoo on my neck.
I'd be more afraid of him in a goalie fight than I would of Binnington, who seems to always try to get in him.
Yeah, because Binnington is, like, kind of a little, like, scrawny guy. Yeah. But Leonard is a big...
He's a panda.
He's a big panda. Big, scary man. John, your star of the week.
My star of the week is Dylan Larkin from the Detroit Red Wings. He had 7 points over the last three games, including a hat trick against New Jersey on December 18th, so Saturday night.
Okay, very straightforward approach. Yeah.
So Dylan Larkin also would be on the U.S. team. That probably won't happen. So,
okay.
Does he have a neck tattoo like Leonard?
I can't confirm or deny that statement.
I'm just curious now.
All right. That's our stars of the week. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, your tweet of the week.
So my tweet of the week, I think, sums up a lot of what we're all dealing with right now and feeling. It comes from Thomas Drance, who covers the Canucks for a long time and for The Athletic. He tweets out, this is like a little narrative, a little conversation. He says, me, an idiot, this summer is going to be great. Just what I needed. Delta variant. F you, buddy. And then me, an idiot, this holiday season is going to be great. Just what I needed. Omicron. LMAO. Apostrophe. I got a kick out of that.
All right. Very good. Yeah, that does sum things up quite nicely. I would agree. Mm-hmm. John, do you have a tweet of the week?
I don't.
You know, do you see how I have to come to you and I'm like, do you have one? Because I know that, like, as many times you have a tweet of the week, you also don't have a tweet of the week. So it's not like, you know, I'm not saying, Andy, your tweet of the week. I'm saying, John, do you have a tweet of the week? Did you bring one? Did you bring anything for show and tell this week?
So to answer your question, yes, I understand that you have to ask me about that.
You got a little scolding there, John.
Yeah,
I know.
Mine.
But I'll answer his question. He asked, he's like, do you understand? I ask you. I'm like, yes, I do.
My tweet of the week is, like, a whole bunch of different people tweeted this, but I just wanted to make sure that we commented on it. Mason Geertsen from the New Jersey Devils, wearing his jersey, was yelling at Tyler Bertuzzi, who, of course, is the only unvaccinated player in the league. And you can clearly read Geertsen's lips, and it just says, go get vaccinated. Go get vaccinated. So that is a chirp that is now happening in the league for Tyler Bertuzzi. So I thought that was pretty funny and worth sharing in the podcast.
I think it's really funny, but also, like, of all the people, like, I wish somebody other than Geertsen had said it, because he's kind of a meathead.
Ah, all right. Well, somebody's got to say it, right?
I know, but couldn't we have gotten another player to do it?
Yeah, maybe. Hey, by the way, can I do a game on the radar? We haven't done that in like 2 years.
Can I do one?
Sure.
You go first.
Mine is probably already going to have passed by the time that this airs or goes live, but Monday, tomorrow, I'm going to be going to the Team USA versus Team Canada women's game.
Cool.
At the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul. And making it even more important is that my niece is going to be playing goalie between periods. So
nice.
I'm pretty pumped for
that's
that.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
it's really going to be great.
Wait, is this the niece on your sister's side or...
Brother's side.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the niece on my sister's side is, I believe, like 1.5, maybe. So she would not be a very good goalie.
Not quite ready.
Nope.
Not quite.
One day.
Your sister's the really good hockey player.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So cool. We've been over this.
Yes, we have.
My game of the radar had been canceled by the NHL.
What?
My brother and our family had tickets to go see Edmonton play San Jose.
Bummer. I didn't know that got canceled. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
Because it's a cross-border thing.
Yeah, yes. Makes sense.
Understand. So,
how else am I going to see Connor McDavid play now?
And John, you said you have a game on the radar?
Yeah. Yeah. World Juniors.
Oh.
December 26th. That is the day after this holiday called Christmas. It's Russia versus Sweden. That's one of the first early, really cool matchups. U.S. and Canada both play, but Canada's playing Czech and USA is playing Slovakia. So I think check out the Russia-Sweden game.
There you go.
And it should be on NHL Network.
All right. That wraps up episode 168 of The Sound of Hockey. Thank you again for listening. We really appreciate it. And, you know, I want to say one thing really quick. Thank you to Sam Meyer, who has been editing these podcasts lately. Yeah. He's been doing a great job, and we really appreciate having him around. And he can choose, because he's editing it, if he, you know, appreciates getting this kind of gold star, he can choose if he wants to leave it in. Or if not, he can just cut it out, and nobody will know the difference. So Sam.
Yeah, we'll still appreciate him.
Just know that we appreciate, whether you decide to leave in the gold star or not, just know that we appreciate it.
No wrong answer.
And we're happy to have you around. Hey, subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Spotify. Leave your 5-star review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Why do I do that every week on Apple Podcasts?
iTunes hasn't existed for like 4 years.
I know. Yeah. And we will read it on next week's show. And also, this was not a short episode as we predicted. Instead, it was a full-length episode. We hope that if you are somebody who celebrates Christmas, we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas with your loved ones and with whomever you prefer to celebrate with. And we will talk to you all very soon for episode 169. Nice. Cheers.
Ho, 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 bring a bottle of rum. Ho, 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 cream and whiskey burn.